I'm Dr. Anthony Bolus, and welcome to Healthy Dose. Getting children to take medications is not exactly as easy as ABC. Whether you are working with an infant or an adolescent, it can be a whole different ballgame with regard to taking medications.
There is a definite collaboration when it comes to the younger kid. The strength of a 20-pound child, is like incredible. Are you this strong? Like, what is going on? Hey, this is not supposed to be this difficult. Like, a 20-pound kid, they will make you feel so inadequate. Going into this, I just saw this little person, and now I'm walking out the room crying myself. Kids are hilarious.
Today, we welcome Dr. Sam Blakemore, pharmacist manager at PedsRx Pharmacy Solutions, which is an independent pharmacy located inside of Children's of Alabama, as he will share some tried and true tips and tricks related to children's medications. More to come on today's edition of Healthy Dose.
This is Healthy Dose, brought to you by Samford University's McWhorter School of Pharmacy in Birmingham, Alabama, preparing pharmacists who transform lives. More on the web at samford.edu/pharmacy.
Welcome back to Healthy Dose. I'm Dr. Anthony Bolus. For children taking their medications, there are unique challenges that may be related to dosage form, flavoring, patient cooperation, and education, but another barrier to children getting their prescription may be before the parents get the medication as they search to find what pharmacy can fill the specialty compounded medicine. Dr. Sam Blakemore, pharmacist manager at PedsRx Pharmacy Solutions, which is an independent pharmacy located inside of Children's of Alabama, discusses tips and tricks for children's medications, explaining first that access to care is the biggest barrier for parents.
So the main problem that I see most often is a problem of access. A lot of pharmacists not feeling comfortable taking care of the children. With children, a lot of times people are just scared in general to take care of them because they're small. Do you know if that medicine works for that child? Do you know if the dosing is correct for the child? You can solve the problem of access with just having more understanding of drug information and where to, what resources you need to use to be able to say, hey, look, I feel comfortable after reading this resource. And then the second problem is kids, a lot of times they can't take tablets. We need to formulate this in a liquid. So that also goes back to drug information resources. So knowing the sources of information to have in the pharmacy to say, hey, if a doctor calls me and asks me, how do I compound tacrolimus? Or doctor calls you, asks you, how do I compound carvedilol? Actually having that resource in the pharmacy to say, this is how you do it. We might not do it here, but this is the information that I used. From there, you might know a few people in your community that compound, and you're at least able to refer them to another location. That's typically a very hard thing to do at some of these chain pharmacies that are doing 400, 500, 600 prescriptions a day. So the parents bring the prescription, and a lot of times what happens as soon as the prescription's taken, it's like, well, we just don't do this. You give the prescription back to the parent, and the parent's just like, ugh. Okay, you don't do it, but who does? You know, and then they're calling the doctor and the doctor's like, I don't know. So it's an access thing for a lot of these patients. And the way we've been able to get the patients to come back to us 9 times out of 10 is they've called 5 or 6 pharmacies. Finally, the doctor gets involved and they're just like, hey, just call PedsRx or call inpatient pharmacy, and inpatient pharmacy refers them to us.
Dr. Blakemore describes that liquids are the most likely dosage form of choice when it comes to children taking a medication by mouth, and depending what agent is used to compound that liquid can determine how long the stability of it will last.
If you walked in our pharmacy, you would see a lot of liquids on the shelf. There's tons of suspensions and solutions. If we're not crushing tablets for the patients that are on ketogenic diets, because when you're on a ketogenic diet, you're limiting sugars, we're doing liquids. And so a lot of the liquids are formulated with either or blend, simple syrup, cherry syrup in some cases, even grape syrup. The cherry syrup and the grape syrup that we use, that's been something that we've used often with our pediatric cancer patients. For whatever reason, some of their medications, when they're on the inpatient side, they use cherry or grape flavoring to help them just take the medication orally. When it comes to a lot of the compounded medications that we have, typically a lot of the suspending agents in those compounding formulas call for Aura Blend. Aura Blend is just Aura Plus and Aura Sweet. The Aura Sweet gives that sugar taste. There also is an Aura Sweet Sugar Free, just in case you have a patient that, you know, you need to limit the amount of sucrose that the patient gets. We also have Simple Syrup. Simple Syrup is one of those general suspending agents. The problem with Simple Syrup, though, when it comes to compounding with Simple Syrup, is a lot of times it doesn't have the same stability that a recipe with Aura Blend might have. So, for instance, a recipe with Simple Syrup might have 14 to 30 day stability, whereas a recipe with the Aura Blend has 60 to 90 day stability. So, you know, in pharmacy world, that makes all the difference, you know, how quickly you can compound it. As far as keeping it storage, as far as the parent returning to have to continue getting it compounded, maybe that can come up with compliance issues. Some recipes do just call for water, you know, but once again, the stability dramatically drops off. So imagine parent picks up the prescription. If it's compounded, say, for instance, with Simple Syrup, they have to come back every 14 days. That can turn into a compliance issue. Whereas if you compound something with the Aura Blend and it moves into 30, 40 day stability, all they have to do is come back once a month. So we typically like to lean upon the Aura Blends in the pharmacy.
Many children do like lollipops, and Dr. Blakemore does have a great pain management lollipop available, but confirms that the majority of prescriptions for children are easier to be prescribed by a physician as a liquid in order to decrease the delay of care at any given pharmacy.
We have a tetracaine lollipop, and the flavor of it changes depending on what we have in stock. The general stability of it remains the same. Kids like that watermelon flavor on that tetracaine lollipop. We use that when they get the tonsils and the adenoids removed, just soothing their pain, because typically they'll use oxycodone as the pain management. Tetracaine lollipop is just something like, you know, add on. And a lot of times the parents will tell you or tell me, hey, look, Sam, we just used the tetracaine lollipop. We didn't have to use the pain medication. So tetracaine lollipop is used sparingly. It might be something we do a few times a month, honestly. For the most part, a lot of folks are just getting those liquids. I think the prescribers feel comfortable just prescribing the liquids and kind of being done with it. Because as you know, once you give that prescription to the patient, if they say, hey, we can't find it, they're calling the prescriber back, they're calling the nurse back, and, you know, that's just going to lead to a delay. And for us, patient pharmacy, the delay is getting back on the road and going back home to Dothan or going back home to Montgomery or Mobile. So rather than delay, they just go ahead and just say, hey, here's the liquid pain medication. You know, here's the liquid steroids. We will follow up. So for the most part, 95% of the time, it's liquids.
Flavoring a child's medication is usually one of the top priorities for parents and children. Dr. Blakemore goes into tips and tricks of getting the right flavor for your child, showcasing that it is sometimes more of a smell issue than a taste issue. The process may be simpler than you think, depending upon the age of your child.
Early on, we used a product system. A lot of the chain pharmacies use the same system, and really, it doesn't make a big difference with taste is more so smell. And I think the smell part is more so of a parent thing than a child thing. Because a lot of times these children, if you give them a test dose of, say, clindamycin while they're admitted, they'll just take it. And if they have a problem taking it, maybe they're an older patient and they don't like the smell of it or even the taste of it, you can give them a little bit of juice or Sprite to kind of chase it with. For instance, like the clindamycin, the liquid, 75 milligram per 5 ml, a lot of times what I'm telling parents, instead of flavoring it, you know, if they're an older kid, taking a little chocolate syrup after the dose is kind of their treat. With the older patients in particular, they're getting, you know, they're like, oh, I don't like that. Oh, that tastes horrible. These younger kids, they're just like, you know, it's going to be some cries. But, you know, you can usually offer a treat. And then a big population of mine, they're not even taking things orally. They're getting things G-tube. So there's a spectrum. And typically where I see the, hey, I want flavor, is typically coming. A little bit of it's coming from the parent. Some of it's coming from the child. But like I say, those flavoring systems, we don't really use them anymore because a lot of times the suspending agents do the trick, the simple syrups, the cherry, the grape, they do the trick. Chasing something with a chocolate syrup will do the trick. But just having that communication with the child, it's like, hey, you have to do this so we don't come back to the hospital. You know, mommy doesn't want to have to come back to the hospital. Do you want to come back to the hospital? And they're like, no. Okay, I'll get you a treat. I'll get you a treat. Just take it. Come on, let's take it. We only have to do this for, you know, if it's antibiotics, 7-14 days. Okay. A lot of these antibiotics, they already come flavored. So amoxicillin, and you don't really have to add too much. So we keep it simple in my practice. We've kind of gone away from a lot of the flavors. And if you want to do something, just chase it with some chocolate syrup.
Keeping with the tips and tricks to children's medications, Dr. Blakemore illustrates the different pediatric age groups and how best to get them to take their medications, including a great pacifier trick for small infants, up to bargaining with older kids.
Typically, if you're in the pediatric world, you already know that you're dispensing a little overfill just in case a kid's going to spit up. A lot of times, if the prescription says 120 mLs, for instance, but, well, they only need 90. But it's, no, you're dealing with a kid. You're dealing with a kid that might spit up. You're dealing with a kid that might throw up, or, you know, as soon as they get the taste of it, they're just like, yuck, I'm not doing it. Okay. Or even parents draw up a dose and they're so nervous about giving the dose, instead of squirting in their mouth, they're squirting on the floor, you know, because they're just, the nerves of the situation is just getting to them. So a lot of times there's already a little overfill built into the prescription. And then as far as like the younger kids, it's, you know, the old pacifier trick where you give say the dose is 3 mLs. Okay. So you drop that dose 3 mLs, you squirt 1 mL in the corner of the cheek. Okay. You pinch that cheek, put a little bit in the corner of that cheek, right? Close the mouth. As soon as you start closing their mouth, give them the pacifier. So you just give like a third of the dose up. So you're just giving them like little squirts, more so towards the cheek, like you're aiming towards the cheek, pacifier, 1 mL. Pacifier, 1 mL, pacifier. You know, that's helping them breathe a little bit. The child's like, oh, okay, they're doing something I don't like 1 second, but the next second, at least I'm getting my pacifier. That's helped for me personally. One parent's holding the pacifier, the other parent's holding the syringe, right? We might, if they hate the medication, because a child will let you know that they hate the medication on an instant. If there's a little spit up, or they're just crying hysterically, maybe you have to get one parent involved and just like hold their arms to their chest so they can't grab, because that's what a child wants to do. They just want to grab. So you put their arms towards your chest, have the parent, like one parent, just kind of keep them like right there so they can't grab. Open up their mouth, pacifier. Okay, squirt, pacifier. There is a definite collaboration when it comes to the younger kid. The strength of a 20-pound child is like incredible. Are you this strong? Like, what is going on? Hey, this is not supposed to be this difficult. Like, a 20-pound kid will just like, they will make you feel so inadequate. You're like, dude, like going into this, I just saw this little person and now I'm walking out the room crying myself. Kids are hilarious. So that's for the younger children. But by the time you get to 6, 7, 8, you know, there's definitely bribery involved by that point. You know, it's like, hey, we have to do this. We have to do this. Work with me. There would be a treat involved or a piece of candy or something, whatever. Whatever you can do. Then by the time you get to adolescence, 12, 13, 14 years old, the conversation is more or less, hey, look, you're about to be an adult. This is the disease state that you have. This is how we stay out of the hospital. Mama's getting older. Daddy's getting older. We want you to be okay. You have to help us, right? You have to take some responsibility. So the conversation is obviously, they get a little bit tougher as the patient gets a little bit older.
Healthcare providers can play a role in educating the parents and children about the prescriptions. Based on the severity of the disease, some kids are on it and others are not when it comes to staying adherent to their medications. It is also important for parents to explain the situation at hand at home to their children, but as Dr. Blakemore says, it's all easier said than done.
I think the disease state really plays a role in it. I've had some kids that really understand. They just get it. They're almost like little adults. They're just like, I'm going to do this. They're stronger than the parents. You know, I've had some children, they were the rock in that family. And the parents were the one that, you know, they were the ones falling apart. And the children were like, no, like, I got to do this. I got to do that. I have one patient. My gosh, that little girl is telling everybody in her family what to do. We got to go see Sam to get our medicine, right? We got to do this. I got my appointment. You need to hop in the shower. She's only like 8, but she's been like that since she was 3 or 4. So you don't really know. A lot of it has to do with the personality of the child. For whatever reason, my cancer patients, some of the patients with a diagnosis with maybe even a poor outcome, like those kids are on it for whatever reason. And then I'll have some other kids just like, eh. You know, it's much the same as an adult, right? Like you just don't know who's going to be compliant. I think maybe some of it has to do with parents as well. You know, just being able to express to the child the importance. And sometimes the parents want to protect the child. Like they want the child to be a child, but they also understand that, hey, the child has a disease where they're forced to grow up. They don't want that to really happen. So they baby them through the situation. Before I was a parent, you could be judgmental. You say, oh, that's a bad parent. Now as a parent, you're just like, I understand. You want your baby to be a baby for as long as they possibly can be. But yeah, I don't think children are in some ways any different than adults, just smaller. It's a weird dynamic. And I think it's easier said than done. You know, like I think it's when you put it on paper, it's kind of like a really good basketball team. You put it on paper, it just all, it's like, oh yeah, like LeBron with this guy, with that guy. On paper, it sounds great. But in reality, when you see it happening, you're like, oh, like it just doesn't work. And that's like the relationship with parents and kids. On paper, you'll talk to the parent. They seem like everything, like they could do it. They get home, it's just completely different. It's like, what happened?
Dr. Blakemore emphasizes that parents are responsible at the end of the day to help give their children the best ways to be successful in developing a foundation for healthy habits that they can hopefully follow through later in life.
We are accumulation of the habits. And so, you know, kind of expressing that to a child, that's a difficult concept. But if you can set the timer, this time we're doing this, or this part of the day we're doing this, and you can say, hey, when we do this, we're healthier. When we do this, we feel better. Just creating those habits. Because if they have poor habits, I'm not even going to say 9 out of 10 times. 10 out of 10 times is because of the parent. They're just a child. The child is not deciding their menu, right? The child is not deciding what they're eating. You're the parent. You're deciding. You have to put them in the, as a coach would put you in the best position. A good coach, a really good coach is going to say, hey, I'm going to find a way to get Anthony the ball right here where he feels comfortable to shoot the ball so he can score. Same way with parents is, you know, we're there in their lives to put them in the best position to, you know, be productive and to have healthy habits. So a lot of it's on us.
In terms of medication safety for children in the household, Dr. Blakemore explains 3 important concepts to safety: drug take-back programs to get rid of medications expired or no longer using, keeping the medications locked away in a high place, and keeping safety caps on the bottles.
Definitely, you have to realize that there's an expiration date to a lot of these medications. Understanding that, first off, there are DEA take-back programs. There are drug drop-offs at some of these chain pharmacies where you can actually dispose of the medications at that pharmacy. So just getting rid of the expired medications in the house is the first step. Second step, keeping those medications high up, preferably in a locked cabinet or if you have a safe, because, you know, you don't want those kids to get a hold of the medications. Any of the listeners to this program, DEA Take Back, D as in dog, E as in Emmanuel, A as in Apple, Take Back program. Those happen probably 2 or 3 times a year where there's just drop-offs within your community. You can actually Google that, see when they're going to have it on the agenda. A lot of times the police in your area handle that take back. then there's a drug drop-off box. With me, the way I dispense, there's always a safety cap. I always dispense with the safety cap on the bottle. I know with older adults, they can request not having the safety cap on the bottle. But with me being pediatrics, 10 out of 10 times, you're getting that safety cap on the bottle. What I would say to parents, keep that safety cap on the bottle. Don't flip that top and to make your life easier. Keep that safety cap on the bottle. But other than that, yeah, just locking it away, being able to store it appropriately. If you can't store it appropriately, in particular the narcotics, DEA take back. You need to drop it back off.
Lastly, Dr. Blakemore talks about the importance of pharmacists' role with children's medications in being the drug information experts.
Pharmacists play an integral role in understanding dosage forms, being able to understand the simple things. So I didn't understand that I would use the do not crush list so often. The Institute of Safe Medical Practices publishes a do not crush list. That's a big deal in pediatrics because a lot of times patients might not be able to take a liquid just because of cost. And so they move on to taking a tablet. Well, you have to be able to tell that prescriber, yeah, you can crush that tablet. It's fine to crush it. So understanding that immediate release tablets most likely can be crushed. Enteric coated or extended release tablets, probably not. Just understanding general drug information knowledge. Do a basic PubMed search and be able to say, okay, this is what the study says. You know, I can do this compound, how to store it, and get the wrong answer. You could kill the patient. What we do matters. You know, we have to just keep running that ball and keep showing people that we're dedicated to what we do. We're dedicated to our craft and we're out there serving the needs of patients just like the doctors and nurses out there. We're trying our best. Kids are the future. So for me, it's a blessing to be able to take care of the kids.
Be sure to consult with your physician and your pharmacist on getting the right medications for your child and using the tips and tricks you learned in this episode to ensure your children optimize their outcomes. For Healthy Dose, I'm Dr. Anthony Bolas.